Englandy. This is the moment the crowd have waited for. Just look at him go.
Congratulations, Catherine, on your wonderful performance in winning the gold medal in the 400 metre event of the Commonwealth Games.
Ian Thorpe really going for it. 3:40.17. This is absolutely amazing.
Tracy Wickham, a great world record here in Edmonton, and there it is, a world record.
The Diamonds Commonwealth drought has broken.
The hockey revolution has a golden uprising.
Adam Ayres, congratulations, and a games record. Adam Ayres has got a hat-trick of gold medals at the Commonwealth Games.
This is something to savour, something to remember for the rest of your life.
Get set, Australia. Welcome to Gold Coast Gold. Here's your host, Dave Colbert.
Hello and welcome to Gold Coast Gold. I'm David Colbert. It's been another big week in Commonwealth Games news, including the draw for the Games hockey tournament. And with the Men's World League final underway in India, we speak with Kookaburra's captain Mark Knowles on his career, leadership, and the Sidelines Champion program being run by the RIS and Commonwealth Games Australia to help athletes and their families prepare for home games. But before we speak with Mark, and as we count down with just 18 Fridays to go to the games, let's take a look at the headlines from the news about the Commonwealth Games. The match schedule for the preliminary rounds of the Gold Coast Hockey Competition have been announced. 10 competing nations on both the men's and women's side of the competition. They were divided into two pools based on their world rankings to ensure an even spread across both pools. Each team will play each other in the preliminary competition before the top two teams in each pool advance to the semi-final and the medal matches. The Kookaburras have been drawn against New Zealand, Canada, South Africa and Scotland. And the Hockey Roos have been drawn against New Zealand, Scotland, Canada and Ghana. Meanwhile, the Hockey Roos have announced they'll play a 5-test series against Spain in Perth in January as part of their preparation for a shot at a 4th consecutive Commonwealth Games gold medal. In basketball, Australia's commenced their World Cup qualifying efforts with two wins against Chinese Taipei in Taiwan and against Japan in Adelaide. The Boomers downed Chinese Taipei by 34 points and Japan by 24 points, with the next generations of Boomers and the team expected to take on the Commonwealth in April next year, getting valuable game time together. Australia's next game in its World Cup qualification process is against the Philippines on February 22. In badminton, VIA scholarship holders Satania Mapasa and Gronya Somerville have finished their Hong Kong Open campaign with a quarter-final effort to finish within the top eight. The result is a standout achievement for the duo, given the event is considered one of the biggest tournaments on the badminton circuit. In beach volleyball, Australian star duo Taliqua Clancy and Mariafe Atacha Del Solo have won the Women's World Tour event at Volleyfest in Manly to all but seal their selection for the Commonwealth Games. The Rio Olympians are the first Australian women's team to win a World Tour event on home sand since the World Tour began in 1992. The win was the fourth consecutive gold medal for the pair since they joined forces in early October. In gymnastics, the 2017-18 Apparatus World Cup Series kicked off in Cottbus in Germany last week. Chris Remkes, Mitchell Morgans and Michael Tone represented Australia in the men's artistic competition, whilst Emily Whitehead flew the flag for the women. Pocket Rocket Remkes continued his stellar World Cup form, finishing fifth on floor and reached the podium on the vault to finish third. Mitchell Morgans finished fifth on his favourite apparatus, the horizontal bars, and in her first individual apparatus World Cup event, Emily Whitehead finished ninth on the uneven bars to narrowly miss the final. In athletics, Sally Pearson said she's not worried about the expectation on her at a home Commonwealth Games. The 31-year-old will head into the Games as the reigning world champion in the women's 100-metre hurdles event and, of course, as the defending champion in her pet event, the 100 hurdles. Pearson said, "I think I thrive off that excitement and that adrenaline. I use that energy and it helps me to be the best athlete I can be on the track on that day." And in organising committee news, basketball, hockey and swimming will boast at least 50% female technical officials for the first time at next year's Commonwealth Games, according to Games organisers. The three sports are viewed as leading a drive for gender parity among officials, with the Commonwealth Games Federation claiming the upcoming edition of the Games will be the most gender equal in history. Of course, the Gold Coast will be the first multi-sport event to offer an equal number of medals for men and women, with 133 events for both sexes. There'll also be 9 mixed events and open events during the Games. And that's this week's Commonwealth Games news. Our special guest on Gold Coast Gold is the Kookaburras captain and Australian team captain, something to cherish. And this man is one of our best. 3-time Commonwealth Games gold medalist, Olympic gold medalist and 2-time bronze medalist and one of the greats of Australian hockey, Mark Knowles. Thanks for your time, Mark.
Thanks very much for having me.
Big week for you. In fact, as this goes to air, you'll be in India for the World League finals, and you're back in Perth at the moment just finalising that preparation for what will be another big tournament for the Kookaburras.
Yeah, it will be, yeah. It's just a good time to be in Perth this week to reconnect with all of the guys. We're putting some of the procedures that we've had all year into play and... yeah, really preparing for an important tournament. The top 8 teams in the world finish the year. It's the first real test we've had for this very new, inexperienced and fresh group.
Do you still, you know, get excited about the prospect of a tournament?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think one of the things when you live over here in Perth in the high performance program is they get to normality to things. And since I've moved home to Brisbane at the end of last year after Rio Olympics, after being here for 14 years, there is a real excitement for me when I come over here and meet back up with the coaches and do some different training drills and get out of what my norm is now, which is in Brisbane. So, yeah, there is a real excitement. And I think for me as well to play against the top European nations and, you know, really see where this group has been throughout the year in our developing phase and where we potentially have scope to move and grow. That excites me.
We jump around a bit in these conversations. There's always so much to cover. And on this episode, we're going to talk about the Sideline Champions program that Commonwealth Games Australia has got for the support staff, the family, the friends, that travel along the journey with the athlete. But I just want to delve into the Kookaburras firstly. And Rio, you know, 6th place, you overcame a foot injury, didn't look like you were going to get there for a while. How do you look back on that Rio experience, having, you know, been on the podium at the previous 3 games and, of course, that, you know, famous gold medal in Athens?
Bit of disappointment. I think a missed opportunity for hockey in Australia and for that group. We did put enough in place over the previous 4 years to be much better than what we put out in Rio. And I think there's always small things that affect the journey along the way, but there are very few, or if any, sporting teams who go throughout a season or a competition without some ups and downs. And I think what this team didn't do as well as teams previously was we didn't overcome those quick enough. So there's a range of things like the travel, and we had some sickness in the group. We lost our second round match to a team that we thought we would have beat. And we just didn't overcome some of those hurdles quick enough. And that Olympic bubble or fishbowl or whatever the Olympics is to a range of different people got on top of us a little bit. And, yeah, I take it really personally as the captain of the team. You know, I would have loved us to do better, my own performance, how I led the group, some of the things I said or could have said. How I could have helped out my teammates more, how we could have worked better as a leadership or a coaching group. So yeah, they're the ones that get away. And coming off 2014, which was just a golden year for the Cookers with that World Cup victory and the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, where we were going as a team to, you know, to 18 months later, where we kind of got to, it was just a real disappointment for everyone.
I know leadership's one of the, I've got a page of notes here, and leadership team versus individuals, one of the topics. So let's get into it off the back of that question. How do you balance that as a team leader and as the sole captain of an Australian team, your own individual performance and that of being the leader of a group of other players?
Oh, I think it's really important. It's one of the things that I've worked probably hardest on over the past 4 years. But one thing I would say, and what I do try and pass on to the young guys who are either captaining the national team in my absence or doing general leadership work around the group, is that to be the captain or to be a co-captain, you have to be playing really well. And that was the one piece of advice that Rick Charlesworth gave me in 2013 when I took over as the captain. He said, "You're a very good leader." He said, "We know that. We know you can be a lot better." But he said the most important thing for him was that I became the best player in the world or the best player in our Australian team, or I played well every day. He said, because guys will really buy into my message and the way I lead if I'm doing those things myself every day and playing well. And I really, I put a lot of emphasis into not just talking and using my voice every single minute of every single day telling people what to do. I took it as an opportunity to show what I could do and hope people jumped on the back of that. And yeah, 2014, as I said, was one of my proudest years because we won the World Cup in the way we did. We won the Commonwealth Games the way we did. I became the World Player of the Year that year. I had easily my best year ever of international hockey, and that made me really proud of how I was able to put all of that leadership in my first year as sole captain and perform well.
How do you balance that? You know, to be the best player you can be requires some selfishness. You know, I know you're in a team environment, so you know you can't be as selfish as, you know, I was as an individual athlete in an individual sport where you're only really thinking about yourself. But how do you balance those two things of the dedication and selfishness required for individual brilliance, but in that team environment?
Well, I think the team, as you said, the team environment is really important. And for me, it's the most important thing. I'm very, very much a team person. And I knew that we wouldn't be able to win tournaments or matches or big moments if it was just one player. And we've had people like Jamie Dwyer and Brent Livermore and Bevan George and Eddie Ockenden and all of these world-class players for the last 15 years. But only on one or two occasions, have we won what we really wanted to in the Olympics in 04 and those two World Cups. So I really put it down to getting more out of the team and asking more of people to buy into a process and really drive what we wanted to. So I would class myself as quite a selfless person. I've never really been in it for me, but I do understand the importance of everybody, and that's how we performed so well in 14 compared to the disappointment in Rio, was we just didn't have enough players playing at the top of their game.
The interesting stuff, the coaching in hockey, you know, Rick Charlesworth's one of the great Australian coaches of all time, if not international coach in of all sports. You look at his record and what he's been able to achieve in the men's and women's game as a player and as a coach. Now with Colin Batcher, you've had a few different coaches. So let's just talk about Rick firstly. When he came back to coach the Kookaburras after his time with the Hockey Roos, a bit of a shock?
Yeah, it was, but we saw it coming. I think most people saw it coming for a little bit. Barry Dancer, in his reign with Colin Batcher's assistant coach, was pretty amazing in what they took that team to be able to do, from a very, very young team after Sydney 2000 to the absolute peak in 2004 at the Olympics. We missed an opportunity badly in 2008. That was probably one of the hardest moments. And then Rick took over. The first thing that Rick said to our group in January 2009 was, he said, "Yeah, guys, you're pretty good. You, a group of you won the Olympics in 2004. you just won bronze in 2008, but we can be so much better. He said, you can be so much better. And he said that's the little percentage growth that he wanted out of us as a group. So that was really encouraging. He didn't, well, we knew that he wouldn't let anyone rest on their laurels, but he came in with a really fresh approach, a complete new coaching staff, a completely different way of playing hockey, which nobody had done in the world. It was full press. It was unlimited substitutions. It was a very, very, very flat structure where a 300 gamer played the exact same minutes as a first game player. So he brought a real evenness to the Kookaburras group that we needed. He was tough, definitely, but he followed up those tough messages with his kind of love for hockey and that group that he took over. So he was a really, really important person in men's hockey, I think, at that time. And, you know, 2 years later, we won the World Cup for the first time in 24 years. So he drove very, very high standards. He drove players to be better, but our team to be better, and he did things differently. And I think they were his three big key attributes that I took out of his coaching.
And his capacity to innovate always is astounding. Yeah. How does that compare now? You mentioned Colin Batch earlier. Now he's back in charge as the head coach after the changes following Rio. How has that settled with the team?
Yeah, really well. I think there's a slight difference between when Rick took over and when Colin took over. The big difference was that Rick took over a group that was fairly similar coming out of Beijing. We had a couple of retirements of a few senior players, but there was a large group of experienced players who went on after Beijing. So Rick took over a fairly experienced group still. I think we had, you know, four, five, six of us still from the Athens campaign, though, for a group who'd been around for a number of years leading up to Beijing. Batchy, he's taken over a much, much younger group. So we had, I think we've had 10, 11, 12 changes. I think 12 out of our squad of 27 have gone after Rio. So that's different. The group is very, very young. Our average caps now are around 50 per player, maybe on average. Rick took over, it would have been nearly 100. So that's a big difference in international hockey and what the players have been able to do before, their knowledge of the game and the structures and world hockey. But what he has done, which I think is very, very important, is he's done exactly what Rick did, and he's changed the way we play. He's changed the way that the young guys have to think about hockey and they see the game. And there's a really strong emphasis on us learning, you know, how to play hockey and how to do things differently instead of just being so automated as we have for the previous 8 years in Rick and Graham Reid's in their tenure. So it's been a really good feel. He's brought in Anthony Potter, very, very good technical coach back from Europe after 15 years coaching over there. And he's brought in Rob Hammond, Olympic gold medalist from 2004, bronze in Beijing, world champion in 10 and 14. So who's kind of the modern touch on hockey. He's the guy who's able to drive the skill development because he can still do it. He's still playing first division hockey. And Rob's a bit more of the driver of things. He uses his voice more. He gets into players. He's setting some really strong standards that he had as a player. And yeah, that's the part that I've really liked about Colin's tenure so far in this first year, is that it's been completely different. And for me, in my 16th year playing international hockey for the Cookers, it was very, very welcomed, I think. I've started to have to think about going to training every day, and the lead up to matches, I'm thinking about my position and I'm thinking about my teammates around me and what they're going to do and how they're seeing this match today. And that's been the part that I've really loved this year.
What is it about hockey that has so many players come from regional areas in Australia? You're from Rockhampton, which is a hotbed of hockey. Jamie Dwyer's from there as well. A couple of other Australian players have come from Rockhampton. What's the secret to regional Australia and their capacity to produce great hockey players, men and women?
Yeah, it's something that I'm just so proud of, and I never forget where I've come from. I think when I look back, a couple of things that I would put it down to is access to facilities. That's one. So we never had to worry about, competition matches and hundreds of teams training. For example, in Brisbane, where I'm based now, we used to just go down to the grass fields any morning, any afternoon. You would just hit around on one of the five grass fields. If one team came to train, you'd just go to the next field. So access to facilities was really, really strong. And I still think that's a benefit, even though turfs have come more into play now than when I was growing up. The second thing, which I am a true believer in, is I think the country kids or the regional-based athletes have the opportunity to play against men or older women at a younger age. So there's not as many good players. So you're exposed to playing against better players and older players far earlier. And I spoke at a club dinner a couple of weeks ago, and I said, yeah, you laugh about it now, guys, and we used to cry sometimes when I was 14 playing in the senior men's division, and they used to smack this little smart aleck around, and you know, they'd put a bit of pressure on the young kid and they'd try and rough you up as a young guy. But I think it does make us grow up a little bit quicker and probably just exposes us to a higher level or a tougher level of hockey at an earlier age, and that's sport in general. You look at those things and some of the younger, you know, footballers or netball girls, regional-based athletes, we sometimes think that there's disadvantages because we don't get the high-performance training environment, and sometimes we don't make state teams when some of the players from different areas do. But there's so many benefits and positives to being a regional-based athlete that I just love.
And your parents were both keen hockey players as well, so I guess that helped.
Yeah, it was, and I was around hockey every afternoon, every weekend, because Mum and Dad played, they coached. Dad was president, then Mum was president of Rockhampton, then Dad was president of my club. My older brother and older sister played. Then they coached me. Then they coached my younger sister. Our friends all played. So it was just one of those environments that was just so good to be around. There weren't a large number of sports in Rockhampton to choose from back in the early to mid 80s, and hockey was one of the big ones, and I think we've seen that quite a bit in sports, is that there's no opportunity sometimes, and you really just have to take them when there is one.
How hard has it been for you to now, you know, married, three kids, married to Jamie Dwyer's sister, Kelly, so yep. How hard has it been to transport them around Australia and the world as you continue your hockey career?
Yeah, it has been difficult. I think as the kids grow up and they get more settled into school life and you've been doing it for a long time, it does get difficult. But as I said, it was one of the things that I always wanted to do, and I never thought I would be able to do it to the extent that I have been able to. But I wanted to make sure that I gave it my absolute all, and having Kelly as a wife who has been through Jamie's journey a lot herself has helped, I think, in her understanding of what's required and why we do things and how we do them and how much effort it takes to get where we want to. And Jamie and myself have had, you know, great long careers, I would say. We've been people who've used absolutely every bit of the talent that we have. And I think, that kind of makes me makes me happy in what I've been able to do with, you know, where I came from and the places you're able to get to and the people you're able to inspire and be around is what I love. So the kids now playing a part in that, it makes me happy. It makes me excited when they watch and know all of the Kookaburras boys and they wear their Australian uniform to school sports days and all of those things are, I suppose, a little bit of what inspires me now as a more senior athlete, someone who is inspired by more than just being a great hockey player. It's about being a good father and influencing, I suppose, the way my kids grow up and the opportunities they have and the person they're able to see every day. So when I see the love in their eyes and they play hockey now on a Friday night in under fives and the under sevens, and when I see that on them, that makes me as happy as when I'm playing for Australia.
It's a good segue into the Sidelines Champions program. You've played in three Commonwealth Games. In fact, when you look at the Commonwealth Games hockey history, there have been five occasions, introduced in 98 in Malaysia, and the Kookaburras have won all five gold medals. You were part of the team that beat Pakistan 3-0 in Melbourne in 2006. I was fortunate to be in the venue against India, and gee, you burst their balloon in front of a packed crowd in Delhi when you smashed them 8-0 in 2010. Amazing. And then again in Glasgow, 4-0 against India. But that home games experience and this Sidelines Champions program, and you know, you love helping other athletes and the personal development and well-being is something that you're really into. And this program from Commonwealth Games Australia with the AIS designed to help athletes deal with the pressure of the home games from every angle is something that really is interesting to me.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. This is one of the best things that I think has been introduced and that I've been able to be part of. I just think that there is so much more to an athlete's journey than just for us hitting and trapping and running or for the swimmers doing their laps every day. There's so many parts to the puzzle, and family and well-being is the one that can play such an important part that may, I don't know if we've overlooked, but probably hasn't been at the forefront of people's minds. And this Sideline Champions program is just unbelievable. For me to be able to go back to my wife and to my kids and be able to provide them with something that is involved in the Commonwealth Games, a place to meet, a relaxing environment, the ability to be around other partners, other parents, other friends, other families in a supported, really well-structured environment is something that I think will help the athletes, because it is extremely tough. We are driven to be excellent, I would say, and every athlete does it slightly differently, but we need to continue to look for ways to improve that athletic journey. And as I said, for me, it's not about having this Sideline Champions program isn't going to make me run any faster and it's not going to make me trap any more balls on the field, but it potentially could lead to me playing better or performing better, feeling better around this home Commonwealth Games. And yeah, I just really thank Commonwealth Games Australia and AIS for putting something like this on, because I know that the athletes, although we find it hard sometimes to say sorry to things that we don't see as absolutely critical in our journey, this is one that athletes will say thank you to.
And managing that expectation too of what's possible at games time, whether it's from tickets or accommodation or how often they're going to see boyfriend, girlfriend, son, in your case, you know, dad, why can't I see you? Because you'll play, you'll leave, you'll get ready for the next match. And all of that has to be managed.
It does. And this is one of, this part is what's going to help us, I think, is just managing some of these expectations. And as you said, just to have people who can help the partners and take some strain away, or the parents and take some strain away from the athletes doing all of that is really nice. And the emails come through regularly. It's not just this one-off, oh, we'll see you there and we'll help you out, or here's a free, pasty and sausage roll on the day after the final. This is a program that's been implemented over the last couple of months No, so we have 6, 7, 8 months of regular contact with the sideline champions, the people who are so influential in our athletic journey, and I think it's making them feel like they're part of it as well. And yeah, the ticketing and all of those kind of things are the parts that just take that away from the athletes, and that's really helping.
So if you're listening to Gold Coast Gold, we're with Mark Knowles, the captain of the Kookaburras, and he's talking about sideline champions. If you're listening to this and you're not registered, you can send an email to sidelinechampions@commonwealthgames.com.au with your sport, the name of your champion child, son, daughter, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever the relationship is. And once you're registered, then you'll become part of the program. Get all the correspondence about the Sideline Champions program, which is a winner. Two more questions, Mark, before we let you go. I know you're off to training before you get on the plane to go to India. That tournament, when this goes to where we'll be starting or underway, up against India on day one in India. There can't be anything better, can there, in hockey than playing India at home?
It's going to be absolutely crazy. We're going to Bhubaneswar, which is a hockey mad city. It's an absolutely unbelievable place to play hockey. I've played there over the last 5 years in the Hockey India League, and this is a hotbed of hockey talent in India. They absolutely love it in what we would class as a small town. It's 100% not a small town in Australia, but over there it is. So there'll be, I think the first 3 days are completely sold out. It's about 9,000 seat stadium. So they'll have at least 13,000 in there. And it will be amazing. We've got a young guy who, is from regional New South Wales, making his international debut, Lachlan Sharp. And I think just for him to feel, coming from regional New South Wales, driving 3 hours to Sydney for training, working in the mines, what he's going to experience in the next 2 weeks is what I would love hockey to be, year in, year out, week in, week out, tournament in, tournament out. It doesn't happen like that, but this is what could hopefully spark a young guy's career. He's taking on the number one jersey for Australia, the first person since Jamie Dwyer 365 games ago and 17 or 18 years ago. So he is going to experience a few things in the coming weeks, and that's the part of hockey and my leadership and me being a long-standing member of the team. This is the stuff that excites me now. So absolutely amazing tournament. We play against the best the world has to offer in hockey, and yes, it's going to be very, very tough for our group. There's expectations on our performance, the way we conduct ourselves, you know, everything around being a great team in the lead up to the Comm Games. There'll be some setbacks for sure, and hopefully there's some great learning for this group, because this is where we want to be. We're 4 months out from the Commonwealth Games in our home country and 12 months out from the next World Cup, so it's a position that a lot of hockey players in Australia want to be right now, and I think that's where the excitement should be growing for these guys.
Yep, and as you run out in that opening game against India, you'll be able to lean across to Lachlan and say, "You're not in Lithgow anymore, mate."
That's exactly right.
Steal a line from the Wizard of Oz.
And he will know that, don't worry.
It's good stuff. The tournament is on Fox Sports as well, and if normally the time zone is good, you sit down and night time and watch a bit of international hockey. Really looking forward to that from the 1st to the 10th of December. Final question, Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast. Gold medal number 4 in sight. You're the flag bearer for the closing ceremony. You'd have to be in the mix to be the flag bearer at the opening ceremony this time. Do you allow yourself, Mark, to, at 33 years of age, in the, you know, if I can say it, the twilight of your career, you're able to look forward and think about what it would be like to play another home Commonwealth Games and potentially, you know, win a fourth consecutive gold medal?
Yeah, I definitely do. I'm quite an even-tempered person. I'm able to prioritise what's right for me in terms of family, work, training, and I'm fairly good at planning out my tournament structure. So this has been on the radar for me. It was one of the driving factors to keep playing after Rio, and the move home to Brisbane was based largely around me wanting to be involved more in Queensland in the lead up to this Commonwealth Games. So I've loved every moment this year of being involved with the Commonwealth Games Australia, sponsors, volunteers days, gala dinners and breakfasts. And for me to be able to drive my kids, my sister lives on the Gold Coast, and my wife down to the Goldie, you know, 40 minutes, 45 minutes from our house, and for them to experience what, you know, we've waited for in Australia for the last, since 2006 and 1982 before that, this is something that really excites me and drives me to continue to train, to continue to improve my standards, to continue to want to push the players in my team, because we do want to be successful. There's a part of athletes who want to get to an event like this, or to get to the Olympics. That's the first little stepping stone, I would say. And the next part is wanting to do well and wanting to be successful. And we come from a sport that has very high standards and expectations around hockey in our country and at these tournaments. And I think getting there and just playing a part is excellent and is something that we can strive for, but we want to be so much more than that. We want to be the champions. We want to be pushing for absolute greatness. We want people to be talking about the Hockeyroos and the Kookaburras, and hockey is a sport in Australia, and that's the part for me that makes me want to keep doing it and makes me want to keep making this team better. So, yeah, I do look ahead regularly. We're down at the Gold Coast, you know, just being at the beach with kids and seeing my sister, and I've felt the buzz grow over the past 12 months to a point now where people are very, very excited, and that's as an athlete, but that's also as a general public. So I just really look forward to being involved in the event. There's Australia and the world's best athletes on show, and this is what we want to be doing as athletes.
Good stuff, Mark. I really enjoyed this chat. I'm sure our listeners on Gold Coast Gold will enjoy it as much as I have talking to you. Best wishes in India. Good luck for the final lead up to the Commonwealth Games. We can't wait to watch the Kookaburras in action as they take on the rest of the Commonwealth next April.
Thanks very much, David.
That's it for this edition of Gold Coast Gold. A reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an edition. You can join us at Commonwealth Games Australia on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the news regarding the Australian team at the 2018 Gold Coast Commonwealth Games. Until next week, thanks for your company on Gold Coast Gold.